Driving on the war we fight, driving about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind him switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down our country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, our fighting and important died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country horse, you're walking on the fighting side of me. I read about some squirrely guy that claims he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down our country, man, they're walking. Let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country horse, you're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a way of life, our fighting and important die to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song
when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on lightresistanceradio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, what do I have here? Oh, yes. Campus props are campus outcasts in many cases. Intellectual conformity is a key driver of success in academic communities, according to Arthur C. Brooks. This was originally a New York Times column that appeared in the Saturday National Post. Brooks writes, "These days, the news is full of sensational stories of violent campus mobs shutting down conservative speakers and freaked out college administrators treating rioters with kid gloves. Such stories offer excellent fodder for critics who are eager to condemn university culture. But I believe they distract from a deeper, subtler intellectual problem on the modern campus, the profound alienation of professors who don't hold the mainstream political views and are treated as outsiders as a result." This is the argument of an important book titled Passing on the Right, Conservative Professors in the Progressive University, written by the political scientists John A. Shields and Joshua M. Dunn Sr. It gives a glimpse into the lonely lives of ideological strangers on the modern campus. While conservatives represent America's largest ideological group, at 36% of the population, they constitute less than 10% of the faculty in social sciences and humanities, and a small fraction of that at elite private schools. Many report feeling like oddballs who never quite fit in. Generally, these professors fear they have little hope of advancement to leadership roles. Research backs up this fear, suggesting that intellectual conformity is still a key driver of personal success in academic communities. And he cites a couple of studies about that. Some might argue that it doesn't matter, or it is even a good thing that conservatives on campus are marginalized. After all, there are many organizations to which philosophical differences are legitimately disqualifying. No one believes that there is anything strange about a Christian church seeking as clergy members only those who share the congregation's faith and theology. Buddhists may be wonderful people, but they still need to not apply for the job. That is, as a minister of the United Church of Christ. But such discrimination is legitimate only when it pertains to the core mission of an organization. It would be less sensible and acceptable for a congregation to reject the best qualified theologian and preacher because of how he or she voted in the presidential election. That church would be prioritizing ephemeral political battles ahead of its deepest spiritual concerns. That's a pretty bad trade. Similarly, academia is right to rank candidates based on their expertise and intellectual commitment. But should professors' political philosophies factor into how welcome they are or the likelihood of their leading departments and institutions? Only if the fundamental goal of the university is more political than scholarly. And I think he makes some very, very strong and good points there. And that actually appeared, believe it or not, in the New York Times. Well, I got an interesting piece of information today, and I want to thank Diane King for having sent that. this is actually a Breitbart. I'm sorry, not Breitbart. Sorry, this is a Huffington Post story, which I found quite interesting. A new poll taken in the wake of the violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, finds that while Americans widely say they oppose racism and white nationalism, many still appear to hold far-right white supremacist views. Now, of course, you've got to be really careful of this labeling. Far-right, that's entirely a loaded judgment call. Now, some people would say that Donald Trump is far-right, although I would say he's a little harder to characterize. He's a nationalist. Economically, he may be a little bit less than a pure libertarian conservative. You've got to be careful of these terms. And unfortunately, contributed to the confusion because this week he endorsed a resolution passed unanimously to its everlasting disgrace by both the House and the Senate in the United States, condemning neo-Nazism, white nationalism, and white supremacy. Now, I would like to think they were condemned. Some of that condemnation was to some extent condemning some of them, and I would hope some of them are white nationalists. White supremacists, that's a little bit dicier thing, you know. What is a supremacist? Well, in my opinion, it's somebody who wants to impose his ways, let's say democracy, on other people. Well, like somebody like George Bush, who wanted to export democracy to the Middle East. He was talking about regime change and going to change regimes and impose a system that probably the people in Iraq hadn't actually asked for. And anyway, it's really up to them to choose the system of government. Anyway, that to me would be a white supremacist or a supremacist. Now, a white nationalist is a different matter. White nationalism is two things. First of all, it's pride in being white, pride in our culture and our people, and it is also defensive in the sense that we want to preserve what we have. We don't want to be the victim of a takeover or an immigration invasion. And there are members of the House of Representatives and the Senate, Representatives King for one, who is clearly a white nationalist. And I think it's always very dangerous to condemn things holus bolus, especially if in fact you really are being asked to condemn yourself. Now, you know, this really, in my opinion, is degeneracy. And I've had arguments with my co-host on the Trump Phenomenon Day, Jamie Kelso, said that Trump had no choice. Well, I say you always have a choice. I would have, if I were he, said I will not sign a condemnation unless you condemn all extremism. In fact, actually, you shouldn't be condemning people's views. I find it very unseemly for elected representatives to condemn the views of people in their country. Now, it might be perfectly legitimate to condemn another country, to condemn the latest missile tests by Kim Jong-un. But I find it highly improper to condemn the viewpoints of people in your own country. We have slid quite away from the proper role of members of elected members, whether they're members of parliament or members of the House of Representatives or the Senate, and that is to reflect the will of the people. Well, first of all, you've got to be prepared to shut up and listen to the will of the people. Or listen to the various voices. Anyway, the Huffington Post reported a new poll in the wake of the violence at Charlottesville finds that while Americans widely say they oppose racism and white nationalism, many appear to hide a whole far right white supremacist views. you notice the slippery way the writer jumps track from. Racism and white nationalism, which apparently many Americans oppose, but they seem to hold far right and white supremacist views. The Ipsos poll for Thomson Reuters and the University of Virginia Center for Politics was conducted online from August the 21st to September the 5th. In the weeks following the deadly white supremacist rally at the University of Virginia campus. It wasn't white supremacist. It wasn't saying, whites are the best and everybody else is garbage. It was called to defend the Confederate monument, the statue of Robert E. Lee, which the rascally city, led by a Jew with a mayor, a Jewish mayor, and a vice mayor who is a black agitator, wanted to remove. That's what this was about. It wasn't about whites being supreme. That was not what the rally was called for. And to describe the violence there, the violence at a white supremacist violence, it wasn't the white nationalists who were violent. Unfortunately, horrible policing, or probably deliberate policing, police seemed to want a confrontation with the violent Antifa, and instead of separating the two groups, the police herded the white nationalist parade right into the park, right past, right in front of the Antifa. Well, now, it doesn't take a genius to realize that there's probably going to be violence. And then, that of course gave the police the excuse they needed to declare an emergency and the rally. Which was the obvious intent from the very beginning. Anyway, with press reports, you have to read them carefully, because regrettably, they are for the most part not news. Now, news, as Sergeant Joe Friday used to say in the 1960s TV series Dragnet, Friday was this tough, no-nonsense cop with a brush cut, and he would always say some hysterical, let's say, woman who's reporting a crime, say, the facts, man, just the facts. In other words, don't need your editorializing or your emotion or the drama, just what happened, who, what, where, when, and if possible, why. Okay, so this poll was taken, asking questions about race that the respondents could agree or disagree with to varying degrees. This is what the poll concluded, while there's relatively little national endorsement of neo-Nazis and white supremacists, according to the poll's findings, there are troubling levels of support for certain racially charged ideas and attitudes frequently expressed by extremist groups. The writer is sliding all over the place here. Okay, well, there's relatively little national endorsement of neo-Nazis and white supremacists. Quite frankly, they're not the same thing. Neo-Nazis, and I know virtually nobody who would identify himself as, I'm a neo-Nazi. No. Nazi, for one thing, is a term of abuse going way back to the growth of the National Socialist Movement in Germany in the 20s. And it basically was, to make a long story short, a way of mocking members of the party as country bumpkins. Ignaz was your stereotypical Bavarian farm boy, or in American terms we might call him a bubba. And Ignaz became shortened to Nazi. Well, this is like, roughly like, calling people in the conservative movement bubbas. You know, a not very bright southern country boy. That's the intent. What would you call yourself that? Why, yes, I'm a Nazi. Well, actually, I'm not a Nazi, I'm a neo-Nazi, which means a new Nazi, now a new National Socialist. I know virtually nobody who would so identify. So I'm not surprised that neo-Nazis, having been vilified as Satanists, have a good press beside National Socialists in the largely Jewish-controlled mass media. I'm not surprised that very few people would say, yes, I support neo-Nazis. While the vast majority of Americans polled expressed support for racial equality, when asked in so many words, 70% strongly agreed that all races are equal, and 89% agreed that all races should be treated equally, people's responses got murkier when it came to expressing their viewpoints on particular issues related to race and extremism. I'd like to explain that. First of all, we've been told, almost anybody who's been in the education system in the last 50 years has been told that all people are equal. And people telling you that, you will even quote the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal. Well, the problem with that is, that's the slogan, and people often react to questions by repeating the comfortable slogans they've heard. Do you believe that all races are equal? And people are inclined to say, because they've heard it a million times, yes. Although, when they examine it, and when you ask more probing questions, you often find out that they don't believe that. Well, in fact, people don't believe it, but they say they do. Okay,
that people believe. Well, then the another way of another question is, 89% agree that all races should be treated equally. Well, that's a little different from whether all age groups are equal. Should everybody be treated fairly? I think most people, myself included, would say yes, of course they should. Anyway, uh, 31% of Americans, according to this poll, strongly or somewhat agreed that America must protect and preserve its white European heritage. I am disappointed that it's not much higher. But now that is apparently a white supremacist point of view, a neo-Nazi point of view. I would say it's a nationalist, it's a common sense point of view. Why should we flip it around? The opposite would be we don't preserve our white European heritage. Well, that's like disowning your own family. For instance, the article from Huffington Press goes on. For instance, while only 8% of respondents said they supported white nationalism as a group or movement, a far larger percentage said they supported viewpoints widely held by white supremacist groups. So you see this, the tricky little slide and dance. We go from white nationalists to white supremacists, and there is a difference. I know most of the people I know in the movement are white nationalists. I mean, they're certainly not black nationalists, and they care. I mean, they care about our people, and that did not even used to be considered extreme right. Everybody, with the exception of the smallest number of degenerates, cared about our people. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. But I stress how important it is to watch those words. Um, 39% agreed that white people are currently under attack in this country. That's nearly 40%. Ooh, that's white supremacy. No, it's not. It's obvious. Anybody who's thought more than 10 seconds about affirmative action, where minorities in the United States, blacks particularly, get preference in Canada, it will be women, cripples, Native Indians, and non-whites get preference. Well, of course, whites are under attack, obviously. The poll results do show both an American public that overwhelmingly rejects racist affiliations and movements, but at the same time is more tolerant of racially insensitive positions, says Kyle Condit, communications director at the University of Virginia Center for Politics. Racially insensitive positions. So wanting to preserve your own race and your traditions is insensitive. Oh, I'm sorry if some black or third worlder takes offense to flipping bad. The results may be what you might expect from a country that's arguably defined by racial conflict, this professor said, and one that can vote for an African-American for president. He's a Negro who ran on a on a unity less than a decade ago, and then turn around and vote for a vehemently anti-immigrant candidate who exploited white grievances. Exploited them? They're real. What he did was reflect grievances. The poll addressed several hot-button issues surrounding racial justice in America, and in many cases, the majority of respondents seem to agree with more conservative viewpoints. When it comes to the debate about removing Confederate monuments, for instance, most Americans polled, that's 57%, said they think the statue should remain in public places, and less than one-third, 26%, said they think they should be removed. Right. So, a solid, and that was the point of the protest at Charlottesville. It was not to proclaim the superiority of whites, that's white supremacy, or rather, in a more or a more mischievous way to say whites ought to impose their ways on other, on foreign and other people. It was to preserve American heritage. I won't just say Southern heritage. It's part of those statues reflect a part of the United States, a part of history.
Touching on the on recent heated debates surrounding free speech versus hate speech. Free speech versus hate speech. Hate speech is simply a term of defamation. Hate speech is speech that the speaker, the person who uses that term, hates. Has nothing to do with the words. But anyway, the poll found a majority of Americans, 59%, agreed with the statement that political correctness threatens our liberty as Americans to speak our minds, a view often touted by conservative leaders, including President Donald Trump. Well, that's right. Political correctness has tried to outlaw speech, certain types of speech, even though the United States has a very has a great First Amendment. But this, my friend Doug Christie, the late free speech lawyer, or premier lawyer on free speech issues in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s in Canada, often said not to look to constitutions or bills of rights or charters of rights and freedoms for what freedoms you have. He said you only have those freedoms you're prepared to fight for. Now that's, and I think many Americans see forces in the United States, especially on campuses, trying to shut down speakers, saying, "Oh, they're hate speech." Well, even if the speech is hateful, so what? You have to not have to listen to it. You don't have to agree with it. Even support for interracial marriage, 50 years after the landmark Supreme Court decision Loving versus Virginia, isn't as widespread as one might think. Around one in six Americans, or 16%, strongly or somewhat agree that marriage should only be allowed between people of the same race, while 65% of Americans disagree. Now, that wording is problematic. It would appear that one in six Americans, or 16%, believe that interracial marriage should not be allowed.
Now, that's the way the question seems to be worded. I think if the question were asked differently, do you approve of interracial marriage? Not a matter of whether it's allowed or not. I don't approve of women chewing gum. I think most often they look foolish. They look less feminine. They look like a cow. But do I think they should be prevented from chewing gum? No. And you know that there's a subtle difference. A difference that I suspect people who thoughtfully answered the poll probably saw. Do you think it should be prevented?
Well, to be fair, let's see what the wording was. Should marriage should only be allowed between people of the same race? So it should only be allowed,
not that whether it's not that it's, it would be more desirable if you had married your among your own people, but be allowed. Now that's legislation. I would not be in favor of miscegenation legislation. I certainly would speak very strongly against the action of miscegenation. As NAACP, that's the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People Legal Counsel Fund staffer Janai Nelson told the Huffington Post last month, calling out extremists, white supremacists, neo-Nazis is an important but very low bar for where we should be as a nation at this stage of our democracy. And okay, blah, 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 blah. I took a lot of hope from this article, actually, because it tells me that despite the condemnation this past week, and regrettably Donald Trump went along with it, a lot of Americans have very sensible views on race and preserving our own people. And that's even in the face of questions or
that were not nearly as good as I think they could have been. But anyway, that was the Huffington Post. Well, this is Paul Trauman. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Going to play a couple of songs from a man who records as a Rebel Son. And this first one is Mr. Confederate Man. And this is Rebel Son. And this is Paul Fromm. And you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com.
I was just a little boy in elementary school. English and math and science class, learning the golden rule. I learned how to add and how to subtract, how to multiply and divide. I learned about bugs and I learned about plants and I learned how to read and write. But my most favorite class of all was my last class of the day, when my history teacher would tell us tales of old times long gone away. I was amazed at the way she knew all the people and their names and the places and the days. That's when I first learned about General Lee and his 13 rebel states. One day she came to school with a big brown grocery bag. She opened it up, we all helped her hold up this great big egg-shaped flag. She said, class, now only a fool will tell you this flag is a symbol of hate. It represents the men who fought and died with pride for our Confederate states. Your assignment tonight, I want you to write, I want you to pretend that one of these brave men came back to life. Now what would you say to him? Well, the school bell rang and I thought as the bus carried me across town. I got out my pencil and my notebook pad, and this is what I wrote down. I wrote, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man. The next day in history class, I put my paper on the teacher's desk. Then she called me up in front of everyone because she said she liked mine the best. As I walked up to the head of the class, my teacher smiled and she nodded at me. Then I saw a tear roll down her cheek as I began to read. I read, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate Man. Well, I was at home reading through the other day when I ran across my old teacher's name and I saw she had passed away. With a bittersweet smile I looked up at my wall, a wrinkled paper in an old wood frame.
where underneath pencil words almost faded away, she had marked a great big red A. Plus, Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate Man, I rose. Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate Man.
And that's Rebel Son, Mr. Confederate Man. We're going to play another song by by Rebel Son. And this is Sitting Up Drinking with Robert E. Lee.
I pulled up in the yard and saw a cotton field out back. He invited me to sit with him and share a fifth of Jack. He had crisscross bars and 13 stars blowing in the wind. He said, save your Confederate money, boy, cause the South will rise again. And Robert E. Lee did not like them Northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he didn't give a shit. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be. And I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. We talked about his troops and the rebel infantry, and those 13 southern states that live in infamy. As he took another swig of his black label whiskey, he said, that Yankee pride don't mean a damn thing to me. He spoke about his men and how they always fought so brave, and how they wove their sacred flag, though many lives they gave. He struggled to gain independence for his southern ground. He stood up for his cause and never wants to eat back down. And Robert E. Lee did not like them Northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he didn't give a shit. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be. And I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. Dream is still alive, even though his body's
dead. Robert E. Lee's memory lives on in the Southern soul, along with his boys who fought and died out in the cold. Lee was a man with tons of courage, a hero without a doubt. He was a man with determination, he was a man from the South. And Robert E. Lee did not like the Northerners one bit. He was a rebel and he knew it, and he didn't give a shit. He said, son, I've got many stories to tell. Ulysses S. Grant, kiss my ass and go to hell. We've been talking about Dixie and how old times used to be, and I've been sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. Drink him up, bro.
That's Rebel Son, sitting up drinking with Robert E. Lee. I want to thank Jay in Queensland, in Australia, for sending this my way. I always appreciate the people sending me good material. And this is an alternative national anthem for Australia. It's, you'll like it. This is nationalistic and good stuff. Thanks to Jay in Queensland, Australia. Why are we having trouble with this? Okay. There we are.
Well, I'm a true blue Aussie and I'm dinky dark. Love me country and I love this life. I love me missus and the kids as well. I hate to say, but it's gone to hell. The politicians want to sell our land to anyone with cap in hand. And let them take our Aussie jobs, fill her up with foreign mold. Oh, we're true blue Australian made. Yeah, we're dinky dying. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate. When we give our hand, we're asking you to join us, not take over this land. Well, a top and trolley's been hijacked with all that bloody hell crap. A buggered how me cat can tell, he's turned into a Muslim now. So let them pay for what they use and plainly label hell foods. Bad enough to cop this shit, but the buggers make us pay for it. We're true blue Australia, mate. Yeah, we're dinky dying. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate. When we give our hand, we're asking you to join us, not take over this land. But if you wanna join us living here, let us make it bloody clear. Respect our home as well our law, or else you'll soon be shown the door. Polygamy is not our way, or forcing women to obey. One special thing I've gotta say, marrying kids is not okay. We're true blue Australian, mate. Yeah, we're dinky dying. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate. When we give our hand, we're asking you to join us, not take over the land. There's one more thing you gotta know, to all you knobs who run the show. Think we'll take this lion down? Well, think again, you clowns. go it through to a scraggy mate. Get with Dinky Doy. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate. When we give our hand, we're asking you to join us, not take over the land. With true blue Australian, mate, here we're Dinky Doy. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate. When we give our hand, we're asking you to join us, not take over the land.
If you don't like it, you can kiss off.
That's great. Well, thank Jay for sending that my way, and I'll play that again. I think that's a just a great song. That muscular Australia, no nonsense, common sense, close to the earth. That's what makes us the Australians such a very, very likable people. I've been there twice, and I really enjoy Australia. This is another piece by Tim Murray, a good friend of mine, writer out in British Columbia. Justin Trudeau's rousing pro-refugee rant. He writes, I just saw Trudeau's press conference in Kelowna, that's in the interior of British Columbia. It is obvious that Flakehead has, after 2 years, learned his lines well, as one would expect of a former high school drama teacher. His impassioned rant about Canada's values and tradition of welcoming refugees and immigrants pushed all the right emotional buttons and employed all the standard cliches. When he was done, I was looking for a quick path to the bathroom. Fortunately, the lid was up. Oh, Tim's got away with words there. This man, that's Trudeau, and there's a picture of him there at a gay pride parade with his tongue hanging out. I don't know what it is, and I commented when I put this up on Twitter, that there's something reptilian about that. I know you can always catch a picture of somebody occasionally with their tongue out if they're eating or something like that, but there have been a number of different pictures of Trudeau with his tongue out. I've got to wonder, what's with this guy? I mean, did I miss a generation? Has something happened that I didn't quite catch? But I don't think this is very respectable behavior. I think it's quite demonic. Now, I know in our culture there are occasions where you stick out your tongue. One is, if you're very childish, to show contempt for somebody. You can also, as a gesture, speaking about, I stopped at such and such a hamburger joint today, and the food was, and you stick out your tongue. But that's not the context here. Trudeau is quite into this gay pride parade. He's grinning, his arms are up, and it really does look demonic. And the thing that really appalls me is that he is the prime minister of our country. No, I didn't vote for him, and no, I don't like it, but you would expect that the prime minister would exercise at least a certain degree of decorum. But it wouldn't be just anything goes. Anyway, back to Tim Murray's plot piece. This man, that's Trust Fund Kid, actually believes that Canada alone has discovered the perfect formula for making hyper-third world immigration work. We know how to do it right. We know how to integrate migrants. How many migrants, you ask? As many as want to come. That's the official thinking here. At that point, reporters jumped in to ask him why, if that's the case, that he sent out emissaries to tell would-be refugees that we have rules. We welcome and will continue to all those who are fleeing persecution, war, and disaster, but they have to follow the rules. What are those rules, you ask? Well, it usually goes like this. You put one foot on Canadian soil and say, I'm applying for refugee status, and you're in. You get food, lodging, and a work permit while you wait. If your claim is rejected, you apply for an appeal. More time to settle in. If that too is rejected, you receive a deportation order. And then in half the cases, you don't show up for your removal. I mean, can you believe anything so daft? If a person's ordered deported, they're then advised to, at some convenient moment, show up to be removed? Well, you can imagine what a fair number of them do. And they simply say, oh, yeah, okay, well, I'll be there. Don't worry about it. Yeah, I mean, the message we send to the third world is we're not serious. And they get that. The word on the street is these clowns aren't serious. And Tim Murray continues. Chances are you go to a big city like Toronto and melt away into the background. Since the government doesn't keep track of who leaves the country, they won't even know if you've left or not. And that's right, we don't have any exit permits. Exit documents. When I entered Japan, for instance, you present your passport as you leave, and you present your passport as you leave. And so they have a track. And when I've been to Japan, I believe I'm on a 90-day visa. Presumably, if I haven't exited the country by the 90th day, they might come looking for me. Certainly, that's the way in Cuba. I mean, if a third world backward communist country can figure out how to control its borders, a tourist visa is easy to get for Cuba. They readily give it to anybody on a plane bound for Cuba. So it's not really a security check. It's not really a way to keep out people that might be hostile to their regime, because there aren't that many to go there. What it is, though, is a way of making sure that if you go to Cuba as a visitor, that you leave the country. That's perfectly reasonable. And it's also a way to shake you down. I forget what it is. I think it's $10, but it's an additional shakedown of the traveler. But point being, if Cuba can figure out how to control their borders, why can't we? Moreover, you can rely on traitorous city councils to declare their cities sanctuaries, where local law enforcers are instructed not to cooperate with border security agents. Cities like Toronto and Montreal, for instance. In the meantime, if you can put down roots by slaughtering a Canadian kid or having his baby, you'll be harder to eject, especially if you can find a credulous cleric to champion your cause and an idiot journalist or TV reporter to pull heartstrings. Churches come in handy that way, don't they? Harboring liars and lawbreakers in the name of Christ. Theoretically, TV and press reporters have an obligation to hold reporters' feet to the fire. But in matters of immigration and refugee policy, that's seldom the case. They typically don't press home the attack. In this case, obvious follow-up questions to Trudeau would have been, so you welcome the world, all the 10 millions of people who are fleeing awful circumstances, but you assure us that they will be processed in according to the rules? How many resources would it take to do that in an expeditious way? How much would it cost Canadian taxpayers? If 5 million Haitians, 50 million Central Americans, 1 million Afghans, 5 million Syrians, and 20 million Africans, and 30 million assorted Asians wanted in, what would be the price tag? $1 trillion? $5 trillion? $15 trillion? Enough to double the federal debt? Who knows? Other questions would be, what do you mean by integrate? Integrate into what? Our mainstream culture? But you said that Canada doesn't have a culture. And then you spoke of core values. We have core values but no culture? Or is it that we have a culture but no core values? You continually tell us that diversity is our strength. How diverse shall our diversity be? Now, good questions. And he would be reduced to blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Thanks to the policy of mass immigration, we went from 6 to 260 ethnic enclaves since your father left office back in 1984. Are you aiming to make it 460? Will we be dialing 15 for English? Will we be driving on both the left and right side of the road as we please? Will some be practicing female genital mutilation according to their preference? Will MPs be able to give their maiden speech in Tamil or whatever their mother tongue was? Will some be able to practice polygamy and collect federal money for each wife? And in fact, they are under the table right now doing that, Muslims. And the million-dollar question, will there be diversity of thought and speech in your Canadian utopia? I think we already have the answer to that one. But alas, no reporter can be found to pose such questions. We don't make journalists like that anymore. Instead, we have virtue-signaling parrots of political correctness sculpted by institutions of higher indoctrination. I don't know what they teach in journalism school these days, but I doubt that independence of mind is a course requirement. More sickening than Trudeau's rant is the certainty that the anti-immigration perspective will never be given equal time to make its case, particularly not on the Communist Broadcasting Corporation, which in large part is funded by the people whom the Prime Minister call angry white bigots. Yeah, that's us. They want our taxes, but they don't want our opinions. But who does? I mean, we only reflect between 40 and 60% of public opinion on most points. No wonder polling firms refuse to run our questions. If you're looking for a political vehicle to give voice to your concerns on this issue, don't look to Andrew Scheer's official opposition Conservative Party, as reflected in his choices for the shadow cabinet. Immigration reformers, that is, the far right, are not welcome in the Big Ten party. Ha ha. He's determined that his party not be portrayed as anti-immigrant, racist, or heartless. The name of the game is not to salvage what remains of Euro-Canadian heritage, but to defeat Justin Trudeau. To do that, CBC panelists insist the Conservatives must be liberals. Well, wait, do you mean that they're not liberals already? well said. Let's be honest. Is the nauseating cant that issued out of Justin Trudeau's mouth in Kelowna any different than what came out of the mouth of Conservative Jason Kenney during his tenure as Immigration Minister, or Conservative Chris Alexander, or Lisa Raitt, or Michael Chong's worldview? Are they substantially different from the boy wonders? Is dog excrement so different from cat excrement? We need a revolution, folks, says Tim Murray. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.